Verdugo back to the pin. He caught it. He took it back.
He's doing everything right now.
That ball is gone. What a bullet by Devers.
I love to see the exit velocity on that one.
Hey, and welcome to another edition of the TC and Jerry podcast. As things are heating up at Fenway Park, figuratively and literally, Jerry Remy not here this week. So Lenny DiNardo making his second appearance on the podcast. Lenny, how are you?
I'm good. Bringing in the lefty again. I appreciate you having me.
Sox for Sox this weekend. They're looking, of course, for new white cotton socks. It's such a great 15th year, such a great program for the battle against disease and things that afflict the homeless population in Boston. You have socks over your shoulder. They are not looking for those type of socks.
They don't want pink and blue with our handsome mugs?
They do not. But the Red Sox, meantime, are rolling right along. And we are joined by the right fielder of the Boston Red Sox. Hunter Renfroe is with us. Hunter, how are you?
Doing well. How are you?
Good, thanks. Tom Garen, Lenny DiNardo with you. Thanks for jumping on this morning. Feeling a little more like Mississippi over these last couple of days, right? As opposed to the last time you were here when it was about 45 degrees and pouring.
Yeah, no, it feels good. The body seems to work a little better when it's, you know, 90 degrees or a little bit less. But 40 degrees and raining is hopefully out the window and gone.
Hey, tell us what the weekend was like. Anytime Red Sox go down to New York, hadn't happened in 10 years that the Red Sox sweep a series at Yankee Stadium. It's early, I know, to talk about sort of statement wins or weekends, but national TV, everybody paying attention. How good did it feel? Not just that you won all three, but the way you won those, come from behinds. You know, that last game was just an epic one. What was it like coming away from Yankee Stadium with those three wins?
Yeah, I mean, anytime you can go to the Yankee Stadium and win two out of three, you know, three out of four, but, you know, to sweep the series is huge. You know, those guys have been good for a long time and are still very good. And, you know, we went up there and played our game, and our pitching staff did a phenomenal job of keeping those guys in check and getting a lot of huge double plays. And, you know, our offense clicked at the right time. I think this is a long stretch for us, and coming off that Houston series where, you know, they won three out of four off of us, and we won that last game. So it gave us a little momentum going into the Yankee series. And you know, we did what we could. And like I said, we had some timely hitting. And that's all I can say.
Hunter, how much do you block out, or do you listen to what certain players are talking to the media about? You know, I'm talking about Mr. Gardner going to the media and saying, listen, we don't like those guys. They don't like us. How much of that is just kind of lip service to the media, or how much is that as true? Because, listen, I played for the Sox back in 4, 5, and 6, and the rivalry was real back then. Tech got in A-Rod's face. I don't know if they've spoken since, but there's talk that the rivalry's back. How much of that is mentioned in the clubhouse with you guys?
You know, I think it's more – media hearsay more than it is anything. You know, it's kind of, you know, we respect those guys. Those guys respect us. You know, we know each other are very good teams. And I think that's the whole rivalry sense is, you know, two really, really good teams are going at it, you know, a lot. You know, we're in the same division. And like I said, through the years, they've both been very, very good teams that have been battling for, you know, pennant races and stuff. So I think that's where the rivalry comes from more than anything. Just to be competitive and going at each other so often is the main focus of that.
You know, and it's you've been around the game for a while. You know about fans, but this rivalry with fans back in the stands sort of gets taken to another level. Like you said, the media plays on it. I think sometimes the fans make a bigger deal out of a rivalry than the players themselves. You guys are out there trying to win games, but did you feel it down there in New York? I think there were low 20,000s, but it sounded loud. Did you hear it from the crowd a little bit? Was it different, and was it nice to have that element back?
Yeah, no, it was awesome, man. The fans and stands were great. You know, we got some heckling for sure. I think Doogie got the worst end of it out in left field. The guys out in right field were pretty cordial to me. But, you know, it was great to have them in the stands, whether they're talking bad about your parents or your wife or whoever. You know, it's all fun and at the end of the game. So, you know, we're glad to have them there. You know, we got fans here too. So when they come into town, I'm sure they're going to get heckled pretty hard as well. So You know, we're glad to have the fans. Like I said, it keeps us entertained and keeps us energized.
Are you one of those guys in the outfield that communicates with the fans? Or are you, do you block it out? I remember watching different players. Some guys love talking to the fans. I remember watching Dante Bichette when he played. He would actually go out in the outfield and do like dances for him. He played off that crowd. What type of guy are you?
You know, during the bats and stuff, I try to just block them out and be quiet and just do my thing. You know, in between innings, I'll go out there, talk to them, and you know, just kind of just go about whatever they're saying, talk to them. But, you know, once the game starts, once the inning starts, I kind of block it out, go about my day. I don't mess with them too much. But, you know, when you're warming up, throwing between innings, yeah, we kind of have a little fun.
You know, you were part of a great rivalry last year when the Rays and Yankees were battling, and we've seen great battles over the years with the Red Sox and Yankees. Such a strange division this year because it looks like it's a four-horse race, like, and it kind of looks like it's going to be that way all year. What's that like? I mean, you got Toronto this weekend before. We can look back to New York all we want, but this is going to be a huge weekend because Toronto's trying to make a statement. This is a great race, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, for sure. You know, you kind of knew this going forward probably since 18 almost even. You looking up in the American League East and Tampa Bay's making huge strides. You know, Toronto's making huge strides. They had all these young guys coming up that had so much potential, and now they're in the big leagues and they're living up to the potential. So, obviously, the Yankees and us, but like it's incredible to see the guys that these guys have kind of come up with and the different game plans that the clubs use and how they're performing. And it's pretty special how all four teams are incredibly talented. And it's going to be, like I said, it's going to come down probably to the last 10 games, and it's going to be kind of fun.
TC, it's a little strange for me. It's strange because all these guys that are playing now are guys that I played against or are friends with. So it's like watching their kids is just a little bit surreal. You know, it's funny.
Sure. Yeah, no, it's like I said, it's crazy, you know, especially, you know, those Toronto group that are so young and so talented. It's like, man, where do these guys come from? I feel like they should be in, you know, double A or triple A, but those guys are absolutely killing the ball. And they have a special group over there that, you know, even when we played them in the, I guess it was the wild card game, I guess it was last year, whatever it was in the playoffs, you know, those guys was like, these guys came out of nowhere. And, you know, you saw it throughout this year of how much talent they had, but you knew that they're going to be forced to reckon with the years to come.
What was that experience like? I mean, if you go to a World Series anytime, it's going to be a highlight of a career, obviously, but to do it in the pandemic, to do it where the early rounds you play with nobody, then you want to be a neutral site, the way that all played out, as you pull away from it a little bit now and have a little perspective on that, how do you look back on that? Does it, I don't want to say make it more special, because I don't know that it could be more special to be in a World Series, but you kind of did it under such weird circumstances and so many obstacles to overcome to get there. What's the memory like when you think about it with each passing week and month?
It was kind of surreal a little bit because, you know, obviously you want to play, you know, World Series in your home park, you know, obviously with fans behind you, but you know, to be able to go back to San Diego and play was pretty special in any kind of ballpark. Obviously, just go back there and play in front of the fans in their own hotel or whatever. They, you know, they're on the balconies watching. But it was cool. It was a different scenario because our families weren't even allowed in the stands until we got to San Diego. So that was weird. You know, they were literally sitting in the hotel room watching us. We'd, you know, come back and give them a hug and kiss, whatever. But it was a weird scenario because, you know, we were stuck in a hotel basically for 2 months and just living in a hotel, not being able to do anything but go out downstairs, play in a golf simulator and get your food and go back to the room. So they kept us pretty, you know, regulated in a strict time frame. But it was fun. It was very hard, obviously, but it was fun.
It's a short and 60 game schedule, but for me, I was thinking about this. It's got to be way more difficult for you as a player to go through that because during a regular 162 game schedule, you have things that you can do to decompress after games, going out, visiting family, you know, taking time off and during days off and just doing things, but being able to decompress and and do all the things that you're used to doing on off days, that was kind of out of the question. So, you know, yeah, it was a shortened season, but for you guys to be able to deal with the mental aspect of the game when you didn't have those outlets had to be pretty difficult.
Yeah, it was strange. Like I said, I think I said at the beginning of the season last year that it was going to be, you know, it was going to be a sprint. It wasn't going to be a marathon. You know, it was going to be a 60-game sprint, and whoever, you know, started off hot and continued that streak is going to be the winner. And I feel like the best two teams last year were in the World Series, and, you know, obviously LA and us, and obviously LA was an incredible team last year, and we ran into a juggernaut there at the World Series. But you know, I feel like last year was a very strange season for a lot of players that, and obviously a lot of players had a great year last year, but for most part, I think it was a down year for a lot of guys. And it was kind of probably to deal with not having fans there, obviously, number one. And two, like you said, it was just a strange year. You didn't get the amount of bats you wanted, and you had a shortened time frame to get things figured out.
Yeah, I don't want to make this all about last year, but I do want to ask you one more thing. Like, you know, we always say, right, anybody makes the major league is one of the greatest players to ever play the game of baseball. I don't care if you had one game in the majors. You're the 1% of the 1% of the 1%. I don't know what percent of that ever got to hit a home run in a World Series. But does it feel different rounding the bases after a home run in a World Series game? I mean, what's going through your mind when that thing clears the fence?
Yeah, no, it's definitely different. I think, obviously, it was the first time. We've had fans in the stands at any part. So that was really, really cool to see, you know, fans actually reaching for a ball instead of the ball hitting seats and bouncing back into the field. It was really, really cool. And it's something I won't ever forget, obviously. And, you know, I think when you're a kid, you think about, one, you want to go to play in the College World Series. Two, you want to make it to the major leagues. Three, you want to go play in the World Series and hit a home run in the World Series. So I've you know, now I've accomplished all three, and now we've got to wait to win the World Series. So I think that's pretty cool. I think that's kind of what every little kid dreams of is playing the World Series and getting a chance to hit a home run. So I'm very thankful that I got to do that, and it was really, really fun.
When you came here, you were one of a number of veterans they brought in, and you know, we've been doing this a while. 2013, I remember people weren't, you know, going crazy when they signed Shane Victorino or Johnny Gomes or Ryan Dempster, you know, but these guys had been veterans, right? They'd been through it. They'd had, like you, success at high levels, Victorino, World Series champ. And so that team came together, and I said in the spring, and a lot of people said it was crazy, but you look at the guys they're bringing in, they're veterans. You know, you and Kike was on the Dodgers, right? And Marwin's been a World Series champion, and Garrett Richards and Andries, guys who've been there. Did you feel breaking camp at all that, again, you're surprising most people, right? Most of the experts didn't have you guys here at this point of the season, but did you kind of feel that breaking camp that this team could do something like this?
Oh, for sure. And I think I've said that multiple times in interviews. It's like, I think this team is going to surprise a lot of people. And I know I said it to at least three guys, you know, for interview standpoints. And you kind of felt it going through camp. You know, we're planning, obviously, the games and playing against the same three or four teams over and over again. But those, you know, three or four teams are really good. You know, you got Minnesota, Atlanta, and Tampa. And we kept, you know, beating those guys pretty good in spring. So I was like, you know what? We look really, really good. You know, our pitching staff is coming along really well. And obviously our hitting is doing really well. And JD wasn't even hitting in spring. So it was a thing where, like, you know what, like, we could really click and hit some things off. And we've done a really, really good job so far. And you know, we got a tough stretch right now going, but, you know, we have played like 17 games, 17 days or something like that. So it's tough for us, but we have a really good team. And as long as we keep going and stay injury free and keep battling and keep grinding through this thing, I think we'll be fine.
For me, when it comes to clubhouses and having winning teams, talent is one thing, but being able to go out there and have fun and feel like you guys take it personal when you lose. I noticed that from the get-go, that when you guys lost early on, guys would be sitting in the dugout, kind of just contemplating, what do we do? What could we have done differently? It's kind of refreshing to see that this day and age of guys that, you know what, they take it personal when they lose. They want to go out there and get the job done. I've been on teams that were talented in my younger days, and that doesn't necessarily turn into wins, right? You've got to have that team camaraderie. You've all got to be on the same train, and it seems like you guys are there.
Yeah, no doubt. I think, you know, like you said, I think we take it personal a little bit when we lose. We go through it and think like, man, what could we have done different? You know, could we got a hit here? Could we got a hit there? Could we have made up take a walk when we could have struck out? And I think our pitchers do the same thing. You know, they take it personal. Like, they go out there, work their tail off before BP and throw bullpens and stuff like this, and make have good communication with Bush. And I think our pitchers have done a phenomenal job thus far of figuring things out and making adjustments, in-game adjustments, and obviously the after-game adjustments. But like I said, I think, you know, we got some tools that we can play with still. Chris Sell possibly coming back here, you know, within a few months. We have some guys that possibly could be feeling a little bit better in the at the plate coming. So I think we'll be fine.
The adjustments you made from April into May into June, obviously Alex Cora, one thing he's always got is faith in his guys. Not only faith in you, sticking with you, even a little bit of a rough start, obviously, but it got going as the weeks went on. But moving you up now, I mean, you're settled in here as a six hitter, five hitter last night. What does it mean to you to have the confidence of the manager like that? And what adjustments did you make? Early on, what were you working on most at the plate?
You know, first off, let's talk about Cora. I mean, Cora's been incredible for me. He's been on my, you know, behind me the whole time. He's been a great friend, and I look up to him a lot. So I want to thank him for, you know, obviously staying behind me and looking up and wanting me, obviously, this offseason. That from foremost. But, you know, as far as, like, changes and stuff, you know, I really tried to make sure that this offseason I simplified my swing a little bit more and tried to do less. And then came in the spring, did great, felt good. Came into the season, and it's always, you know, a little bit of adjustment period from going from spring training to season. Obviously the pitching and stuff is not the same. People say it's the same. It's not the same from spring training to the big leagues and game in-game scenarios. It's not. Started figuring some stuff out at the end of April or in March. And really all I did was I stood up a little bit and tried to focus on not moving my head as much, I guess, if that makes sense. Just trying to stay upright, make sure I don't move my head as much, keep the bat waggle as minimal as possible, and just try to stay middle. And it's worked. You know, I've been able to stay on sliders, been able to make sure I'm staying on above fastballs, you know, good forcing rise balls. I've been able to stay above them and hit them tops of field and hit mistakes when I get them.
When you put it all together, the defense has already been there for you throughout. And we've seen it in right field and people throwing Dwight Evans now when they show you plays. And when you hear that, I'm sure it makes you feel pretty good. But we used to do this with JBJ all the time when Jackie would do stuff with us. We'd ask him to rank his 10. I'm not going to ask you to rank your 10 favorite plays, but is there a play that, like, I think of when you threw out Chapman at third base, the Oakland game, that was crazy. Is there one play that you enjoyed any more than any others this year?
This year, that's probably up there this year, for sure. I think that's number one, probably just throwing the guy, you know, Chapman out third. A few catches, you know, one was diving catch off Austin Meadows. I liked it a lot. Almost broke my wrist doing it, but I did catch it, and I think it was a really good play. There's a few toward the line that was, you know, a lot of fun. But, you know, as overall ranking, you know, obviously those are pretty far down through my career. But, you know, one of the ones that always, you know, sticks to me is, like, I made a good diving catch in the playoffs last year off of it was against Houston. I can't think of who it was against. I think it was one maybe would have been Gurriel. Another one was I can't think of who it was. But anyway, those are probably two that stick out a lot to me in my career just because of the scenario of the game and how big of a game it was.
Can you talk about that wall a little bit? I mean, you've taken to it pretty well. That's kind of difficult to maneuver in right field. You've got the pesky pole. You've got different angles. The wall's at a height where you could really do some damage to your ribs. I mean, you're putting your body out there. But I really feel like you've taken to it pretty well. What did you do early on to kind of get used to it?
It helped. Obviously, we played there last year. I took a lot of BP reps last year when we were at the race there. So I kind of knew going into this year kind of what was going to happen, what to know about it. And once we got to Fenway, we took a lot of, obviously, not a lot of BP reps. Hit some balls down the line, make sure I knew where if the ball hit the wall here, it's going to bounce off. If it didn't hit the ball here, it's going to roll all the way down to that little corner and make the little roundabout. And then obviously the wall height, you know, I'm probably going to end up in the stands about 10 times this year and maybe be a little concussed, but it'll be fun. Hopefully the fans will catch me. And you'll probably see me jump on top of the wall and watch balls in the stands and jump in the stands. But like I said, hopefully as long as it hits me in the ribs and not the knees, I think we'll be fine. You know, takes the knees out, I may be on the deal, but
that just goes back to you communicating with the fans. You got to let them know, like, hey, you guys got me, right? At some point, if the ball goes down here.
Yeah, I may hit you in the face, but you catch me from my head on the seat. We'll be right.
Yeah, cardboard cutouts ain't there to help you. That's how much we've learned. Cardboard cutouts are no help to anybody.
Concrete and metal and then add up.
Yeah, that's what I don't think fans appreciate that enough. Shane Victorino always told me that it's a tough enough corner because of the dimensions, right? It go wrapping around if it gets by you. But the height of that wall, he goes, you're heading back there. There's no peripheral warning whatsoever.
Nope.
He goes, you got the warning track and that's it. And if you're looking up, you're going to slam into that thing.
Oh, yeah. Like I said, as long as it hits me in the ribs or the hip, it's fine. But if I'm jumping and it hits me in the knees, that's where it's going to be issues. And I pray that it doesn't happen, but it's probably going to happen because I really don't care about my body too much. And I just go wherever I go.
Knocking on some wood here for you, man.
I appreciate that.
Hey, I do got to ask. I'm not going to ask you to go full Josh Donaldson for us here or anything, but there's so much talk right now about spin rate and now baseball is going to be clamping down as a hitter. And you know, we're coming off a night where you watch that nasty curveball all night long. Guys are throwing harder with more freakishly breaking stuff. I know it's a cat and mouse game, and I know the game adjusts over time, and the hitting will undoubtedly come back. But how tough is the pitching you see on a nightly basis right now?
Oh, it's tough, man. Those guys, you know, obviously those guys are the best in the business, and they're there for a reason. And, you know, as far as the sticky stuff goes, you know, I think more than anything, it's hurting the guys. Excuse my dog. It's hurting the guys that don't need it, I think, more than anything. I think it's the guys that do need it are – putting a lot of pressure on the guys that are always have been good and have good stuff. And they're having to use it just to be competitive. And, you know, I think that's kind of a deal where it hurts the guys that don't need it. You know, most of our guys, I think in the Red Sox, I think they do it the right way. Most of them. And like I said, all hitters don't care about, you know, like I said, sunscreen and rosin. And that's like a thing that's always been okay for pitchers to use for the grip. You know, no hitter wants to be hit in the head. No hitter wants to hit. You know, we don't care about, you know, the grip stuff, but, you know, the stuff that does help spin rate and make elite spin rate even better, you know, that's tough. And I think that's one of the issues we have as far as like the strikeouts and the batting average and stuff like that being down is, you know, the elite stuff that these guys have now. And they're just improving on that due to the sticky stuff. And, you know, I think the MLB is going to come down on it a little bit. And I hope to see a little bit of change. But like I said, those guys are good for a reason. No, with sticky stuff or without it, you know, those guys are nasty. So I think you won't see a huge difference, but you'll see a little bit of a difference.
Yeah, I hate to see 8 to 10 times a game the umpire kind of, you know, having the pitcher go through the airport security on the way back to the dugout. You know, it's gonna be games and take away from the experience. But I see what you're saying. It's been happening since the inception of the game. People have been trying to make the ball move, trying to do something. But yeah, I mean, the bullfrog lotion and the rosin is absolutely going to help command, stay in the zone and stay away from this area.
Right. Exactly.
Because certain parts of the year in Boston, especially cold weather states, the ball has that feeling where it's super, super slick. Nobody wants that.
No question. That's the thing. Like, and all hitters agree, like, nobody wants to be put in danger, obviously, in the batter's box. And, you know, whether those guys have to use it or not, talking about that, like, we're okay with them using some kind of sticky stuff, but but the spider tack plus rosin plus coke plus pine tar, whatever their concoction is a little bit absurd. Cause I mean, I've felt it, you know, I've had it on my fingers and I've gone up there. You literally go up to, a hairspray bottle, like a large Tresemme hairspray bottle, put your fingers on it and lift it off the ground and it stay there. That's how crazy that stuff is. And that's a little bit absurd, you know, as far as like having some kind of, you know, grip, but like I said, this is the day's baseball. We got to learn how to hit, you know, the rise ball. And I think we're doing okay right now.
I do. Last question I want to ask about that. I'm not asking you to name names, but Josh Donaldson said, yeah, I've been in this game a long time. He goes, I'm seeing things break ways they've never broken before. I'm seeing, you know, have you seen pitches that you're going back now saying, if he did that naturally, good, congratulations, because I ain't never seen anything like that before.
I can say that I've not, that's not pointing out anybody in particular, but I've seen guys that I've faced in the past come back in the past 2 years and throw completely different, stuff wise, mile per hour wise, slider wise. Obviously the guy could have gotten better, you know, that's, you know, obviously an obvious deal, but, you don't get that much better. You know what I'm saying? As you get older, usually you go downhill. But saying that, I've seen guys also, like the guy last night, I don't know if he was using it or not. I don't really care if he was using it or not. He has a one of a kind curveball, one of a kind. I've never seen anything like that in my life. And hats off to that guy. You know, Framber, he's an incredible pitcher. Whether he's using it or not, like I said, that curveball is one of a kind.
Yeah. We're watching. I think breaks, like, it's unbelievable. And Lenny, you were talking about it last night in the postgame show.
Yeah, I mean, it was one of those pitches that I feel like he could have told hitters, here comes the curveball. It's going to start right here. It's going to end here. So late breaking, and it's coming from that same slot that the fastball is coming out of. It's nearly impossible to hit. You know, as a casual fan that's never played the game, they're probably saying, why are they swinging at that? It's on the dirt. But as a hitter, you're picking that up in a certain spot where it looks like it's going to be there, and then it's not. That late breaking action and the short movement makes all the difference in the world.
Oh, 100%. That's the thing, like, It acts like a slider in a case where it starts. It acts like a slider. And then as it keeps moving, it has a late breaking curveball downward, you know, movement to it. And that's what makes it so good. It's just like people are swinging where it should be. And it's about two balls below where it should be. And like I said, he's had my number for quite a while. And I think last night I had some of the best at bats I've had off of him in a long time because I had a little better game plan, but you know, like I said, hats off to that guy. He pitched an incredible game last night. Like I said, I don't know if he uses pine tar or not. I don't really care. His stuff is one of a kind.
I want to ask you finally here as we wrap it up, just getting fans back to Fenway Park. You were here last year playing against the Red Sox when nobody was there. And I remember, I forget who it was, somebody from the Yankees said, you know what, Fenway wasn't that intimidating with cardboard cutouts. You know, without the fans on top of you, just kind of another ballpark. What's it been like to get that home field advantage back on your side?
That's been incredible. You know, the fans have been great. Obviously now coming back to 100% capacity or pretty close to it. It's been really, really fun. The guys in the outfield, they're always, you know, chattering and being a great, you know, support to me and the guys in the outfield. And obviously they're heckling the team pretty good. But you know, just to hear the fans there, being able to throw a ball in the stands and somebody catch it and, you know, see the kids' faces, you know, when you toss them a ball and you know, and have a little communication with them is pretty spectacular.
Awesome. Great stuff. We appreciate the time. Continued success. Keep raking. And it's got to feel pretty good, I got to think. I mean, you look at the heart of this lineup. You're in this heart of the line. You know what I mean? You look at the guys ahead of you. It's got to you got to have a lot of confidence in the guys ahead of you and behind you that this offense is going to keep on raking.
Absolutely. You know, I think we're going to, like I said, tough stretch right now. But I think we're going to come out of it, and we're going to be fine.
Been a lot of fun to watch. Hunter Renfro, we appreciate the time. Thanks, my man.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Red Sox right fielder Hunter Renfro with us on the TC and Jerry podcast. Lenny DiNardo in for Jerry. We'll see you again next week.